Good afternoon. I'm Rhonda Feynman, and this is the Healthy Options program on WERU Community Radio. On today's Healthy Options, our guest is Claudia Schmidt, jazz musician, folk musician, singer-songwriter, and poet, and she's here to help us explore the healing power of music. Claudia has produced 22 albums. She's performed in clubs, theaters, festivals, on TV and radio, and local venues across the country and beyond, sharing a rich repertoire of original songs, songs with personal interpretations of the work with others. Through her years of experience, we know that she knows a lot about the musical expression and spirit and positivity. So we have asked her here on Healthy Options to talk with us about how music can help us stay healthy, inspired, and even empowered as individuals and as part of our communities. Welcome to Healthy Options, Claudia. Claudia Schmidt, so wonderful to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be considered a healthy option as opposed to an unhealthy option.
You are so healthy. You're very much a healthy option. You have all of this experience. You sing. I know you're going to be doing another program, and you've already part of the PSA, as it were, is a song about hope. So let's start there. Talk a little bit about how that comes to be and what that means and why you would even consider that for your audience in this day and age or forever.
A song about hope, you mean?
You were singing about hope. I saw you and Sally do a little...
Yeah. Well, I think hope is an overused an underappreciated word, I think. And I just heard a great definition recently from, he was an environmental scientist, I think, named David Orr, a friend shared with me, who said, hope is a verb with its sleeves rolled up, which I just thought was so incredible because, I think back, Václav Havel wrote about the difference between hope and optimism when he was writing letters from jail, And we in our country, we tend toward optimism conflate optimism with hope. And he went deeper with it. What I really loved is that he said, and that comes in to the sleeves rolled up business, that optimism is sort of outcome dependent. You're looking for something to happen. And I'm optimistic that we're going to, make it to the thing on time. Whereas hope is a state of being, a state deep inside your soul that believes that no matter what the outcome is, you're in the proper place. The state of hope is enough in and of itself. It's not dependent on an outcome. And that's a pretty important distinction, I think.
I think so, too. And how would you, when you are writing and when we're bringing in that sense of melody, of rhythm, well, we know, we've done many shows here with music therapists and such, mm-hmm. and understand the physiological connection of music and our bodies. How do you incorporate that? What rings true to for you as a songwriter as you're working with that expression?
Well, it's interesting because I think it's something I feel inside of me when I'm writing a piece or when I'm singing a piece. And I've just been talking about that. I released this album, Reimagining, celebrating 50 years of being a performer, and I revisited some songs that I hadn't sung in a long, long time. And going back to them, I realized that there was a depth of understanding that I had singing them now. It was almost like I wrote them before I could even quite understand them. But when I was writing them and started to sing them, even as a young woman or even middle-aged woman, there was an element of trust in the way the words and the music fell together, the way the language sort of unfolded into the music itself, that So for me, it's a feeling of this intrinsic feeling of trust that what I'm writing and what I'm singing, it has purpose. And it's interesting because, language and sound are these fascinating, they're these different things that come together in the course of a song and or even a poem, which I feel almost has a kind of melody in and of itself, the way the words fall together. The word I use is inevitability. There's an inevitability, the way one word follows another or one note follows another. And so that's part of the experience for me. Early on as a performer, I had no concept really about, I found out more about the healing elements of music. And it was when I had somebody in my audience come up and tell me that I activated certain chakras during the performance. And I went, what? I had never heard about chakras before. So that got me reading about chakras and then tuning forks. And so that's a whole realm that I haven't really gotten so deeply into, but it's just kind of intrinsically part of what I've done for 53 years.
So chakras, for those who may not know what those are, they're energy centers, different parts of our bodies that resonate at different frequencies. And that's what music is. So I was reading a number of things about music and healing, and there was that sense of rhythm and beats per minute and that kind of thing that musicians have been doing intrinsically. So we've done the physiological, we've done the scientific aspects on Healthy Options. I'm really curious what that resonates in you when you're writing a song and how you share that with your audience, because there is definitely that sense of you have activated my chakras. You have created a sense of ease in a room. Not necessarily what's physiologically that, but when you're creating that situation, what are you doing? Or do you even know?
I'm not really conscious at that level at that time, when I'm making a song, making a melody or putting words together, except to say that they kind of pull me along. Like for writing, for me, often as not, it involves I call it a portal. Which is either something I heard, a word or a phrase, or something that I see, and that kind of opens the portal and allows me to go through, and in some way that thing I saw or that thing I heard is tapping into the deep creative part of me. And so I tell people when I do songwriting things, the biggest part of the experience is paying attention, is taking the time to pay attention, because there's stuff going on all the time. And it's just a matter of being present for those moments, those portals. And then a lot of times the writing does itself. It's not a laborious thing. I follow word to word and line to line. It's very organic. It's not a deep, laborious process. And I feel like it's writing me as much as I'm writing it, like it's a collaborative, it feels like a collaborative thing, even though I'm by myself, I guess is the best way to put it. Often, I cry. It's like I call it the weep test. I come to a conclusion or kind of take a breath in the middle of doing something, and I really trust that. I trust that it's gone to a really, really deep place, and sometimes to the extent that I know I'm going to have to especially if it's a more heartfelt kind of thing, I'm going to have to sing it for a while before I can sing it for other people, because I feel as a performer, you have to be able to give a song away. And I need to be ready to give it away and let other people cry, you know?
Can we have an example of something? Because I think that I know when I've been in a concert with you and you talked about, I wrote this in E flat minor, you know, and there was a reason I put it in this key, which is not a key I usually write in. But do you have an example of something that, I know it's a little vulnerable, made you cry originally, or that has opened that, or you see your audience, people are often moved by some of your work.
Yeah. Well, there's a song, for instance, that's one of my more recent songs called Trail of Sorrow that was written kind of, I found myself kind of bookended between two dear friends. One had lost his husband and one had lost her brother, you know, to cancer and suicide respectively. And I had been sharing their grief with them. And this is an interesting, because this was a very clear portal. My friend had talked, and he'd written me an email and said something about, I'm just on sorrow's trail. And there was something about that phrase, sorrow's trail. Boing. I was just, sort of thunderstruck. And so what I suddenly saw, it was as if it were a Polaroid photograph sort of developing in front of me. It was like an old burying ground and people around the grave, like in sort of sepia tones. But it was old. It was from a long time ago. It didn't have anything to do with current time. It felt ancient. And these people were sort of singing. And then this song came out of it called Trail of Sorrow. I'll just sing a little bit of how it goes. It's like, she found herself on sorrow's trail. No, there's no turning back. Nothing left but to weep and wail. No, there's no turning back. Trail of sorrow, trail of sorrow, trail where light seems so far away. Hearts are tender, so near the veil. No, there's no turning back. And then that was how the song started, and there's like three more verses to it. And it ends like the last verse has a line in it, sorrow's trail, walk that trail as tears do fall. No, there's no turning back. And then saying goodbye is the work of us all. No, there's no turning back. And it was a song, that was one where I would be sobbing while I was singing it when I first wrote it. I get a little teary now talking about the process. And I didn't even know if I was ever going to, I sent a recording of it to the two friends, and I wasn't sure if I was ever going to even perform it, if it was like too personal. And now I have started performing it, and you know, we're all in a situation at a point in life, most of my audience anyway, where that's happening. We're all walking that trail. So I wrote the song, Rhonda, but then it was almost as if I had to grow into the song after writing it.
And as listeners, so did we. In a way. And would you say, I'm really intrigued with different keys, feeling those chakras, feeling those areas. Is this a major key? Was that a minor key? What?
Yeah.
What was that?
It's a major key. But then it goes into a little bit of a minor key in the no, there's no turning back, you know, so. It goes back and forth, but it was written in a major key.
The phrasing, because we talk about how our bodies respond to rhythm and such. So here, that was a good example of that physiological aspect of taking that in.
I was almost like, yeah, you could kind of, it almost has a funeral procession, like people moving, turning back, like walking, and it has that, the motion is inherent in the rhythm.
I'm going to, for people who just joined us, I'm going to do a little business here and let them know who we're speaking with. Perhaps you could think of a song that's like a different upbeat, that gives us a different sense of expression in our physiology.
Sure.
Oh, really? That's good. Don't go anywhere if you're tuned in. But if you have just tuned in, this is the Healthy Options Program on WERU Community Radio. I'm Rhonda Feynman. We're here with Claudia Schmidt, folk and jazz musician, writer of a vast number of wonderful songs with testimony, which are testimony to the healing power of music, whether singing alone or with others. And we are exploring different aspects of melody and rhythm, and we're doing it through this this vehicle of Claudia's voice and all of our voice. So please, <Yeah. laughs> but yeah. So we just heard something major, minor, and that was a very poignant subject. Something that would really open many of our hearts, and we're experiencing. And you've give us another example of something that moves that will move us in a different way.
Well, so on the more rollicking end of things, and this was another sort of moment where I had a visitation from Pete Seeger when I was doing something completely different. I was getting ready to go to an event we do here every year called For Pete's Sake, which raises money for the kitchens that make food for the local pantries and churches that feed the hungry. And so we do either Pete Seeger songs, there's a group of song leaders, or, you know, songs in that spirit. And I was working on Turn, Turn, Turn. That was my assignment, one of my songs that I was leading. And honest to God, it was like I felt Pete Seeger tap on my shoulder and say, "Okay, you got that. Look over here. Just look over here." And I literally picked up a pen and started writing, and didn't stop writing till I had this song. And it's so interesting because it was totally like a receivement, because I don't really write, you know, protest songs per se. I tend to write things that are more circular but this one was just totally out there. You know, I'd been thinking a lot, of course, about the Christian nationalists and what's happening in our country. And so this whole chorus just came out, you know, without even thinking about it. It's like, "Get your Bible off my body, get your gun out of my face, get your fear out of my joy, your behavior's a disgrace. This delusion of oppression is a dangerous obsession. If you don't stop soon, I'm guessing you might end this human race." And it just is like, ah, and all these internal rhymes, and they were just coming out, and I got a line in the first verse about I'm so tired of sanctimony, all your righteous rank baloney, screaming it's all to protect every precious child. When indeed is gutting programs now in need, that's why your pusillanimous piety gets me riled. And so it's about it's protest, but it's with this kind of joyful, mischievous feeling to it. And I found that sometimes performing it, people get a little nervous in it. Like I've had a couple of people, like a Unitarian minister that was afraid that line about this delusion of oppression is a dangerous obsession, that if a black person heard it, they might get offended or something. Like everything is so tense right now and everything's being parsed so carefully. And but in general, people are like, especially when that line, "Get your fear out of my joy." I mean, because that was really part of this whole rise of authoritarianism is about, it's about the decline of joy. It's about the destruction of joy. You know, an authoritarian culture is a joyless culture. This administration or this regime is a joyless regime, and that always makes me suspicious. There has to be joy.
So it's not every song that has pusillanimous in it. So, no. Yeah, I was really, I think this is one of the, I don't know if I can even name another one. And so that's meek and weak. Get your pusillanimous
piety. Yeah.
Piety, yeah. And adore, and then so again, what is a protest song that really, right?
Yeah,
it's something that brings us, takes something current, yeah. and brings it together. And in this case, right. In this, you know, it's like we're singing about very serious things, but in a way that actually is a little is uplifting, in yeah. a way. So that yeah. that melody.
And that's the, you know, the line, because, I mean, we could go on forever with all the serious things going on. There's another, I'm just trying to think of another line in there. Your old crusades take a bow. It didn't work then. It won't work now. You know, a few bad actors just can't spoil this show. We are young. We are old. We are woke, and we won't be sold. and so it's just like, yeah, people go, yeah.
yeah. So it yeah. does. It does bring people together. And it's actually part of that communal aspect of singing and music.
So the end of the song, though, does kind of bring it around, because it winds up, bringing us all around just singing a verse of Amazing Grace, kind of reminding the those righteous people. That, here's a hymn, by the way, that we've all sung lots of times. Have you listened to the words lately? And especially thinking, you know, that it was written by a former slave ship captain who turned the ship around and changed his life. And so that's how the song ends, is with a very heartfelt verse of Amazing Grace.
So let's do that. And I'm going to ask the audience, because everybody, most people, 99%, the majority of people will know this song. And if we're, as we're doing this, if in yourself, you could really pay attention to what's resonating and how your physiology is taking all of this in. So would you grace us with Amazing Grace a little bit.
Just a verse of Amazing Grace?
Yeah. Why not?
Because we take it in. I'll just explain how the song ends.
Please.
If you don't stop soon, I'm guessing you might end this human race. Lay your weapons down unless you want to end this human race. It's high time you learn the lesson from that song. Remember that song. We've all sung that song. Let's sing it again. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound, that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. Yes.
So I'm noticing that my whole nervous system has calmed down. I'm having my heart rate. Music does change the heart rate. Mm. I'm also inspired. Really? Well, you know, it's great if people would write in at some point to let us know how these different songs are resonating in their body. This is very participatory radio, right? We really get to experience what we're singing and talking about. You know, Bernice Johnson Regan, of course, Sweet Honey in the Rock and the Freedom Singers and SNCC and all the civil rights movement did interviews at one point with young kids there's a fabulous book about it. And they were actually, these kids were interviewing her, which is even better. And so they said, well, why did you sing? Why did you sing? And she said, well, we sang all the time because we were afraid. And that gave us hope and it gave us connection. While they were in jail in particular, they could hear each other. And then they knew they were not alone. And so yet that the music was so always, because people sang because they were terrified. And you do, you do the song Still on the Bridge, which is about John Lewis. And we've, and I know on this station that's played quite often, and John Lewis was the great civil rights activist and also congressperson who died in the last number of years and was on well, you can give us some of that song. And the reason is that even then people were singing Walking Across That Bridge. And why? And as Bernice would say, it's because we were terrified. This was not an easy thing.
No, they weren't singing to entertain themselves or others. Yeah, that's the thing. I think before I do a little of that, when I got to go to South Africa, which is about 15 years ago now, I got to spend about 3 days in a little village called Hamburg, South Africa, right at the mouth of the Keiskamma River where it empties into the Indian Ocean. And And it was smack in the singing culture in the cities. It was music was more like pop music, you know, the soundtrack of people's lives. But this place, from the time you woke up in the morning till the time you went to sleep, somebody or some group of people or two people were singing, you know, up and down. There was always some singing going on. And here was this village that was ravaged by poverty and AIDS, and that's why I became really, really re-energized about group singing when I was there because of that, and realizing that, again, if anybody had a darn good reason to not sing, it would be those people, but the singing, it raises the energy. It kind of kindles hope and connection. And I was just there. I felt like I was with my people. A few days I was practically levitating the whole time. It was so wonderful to get to experience that in such a profound and everyday way. You know. It wasn't like people got together and did a performance. They would do that too, but that was just part of it. In fact, in the health, there was a clinic there that this woman, this doctor that kind of helped bring me to South Africa. She was a medical doctor, but she was also a doctor of fine arts. And she had come to this village and she'd started a clinic, but she also started this art project to help empower women to take care of themselves, to do this sewing, to help them be able to raise their own money because they were just falling by the wayside. Their partners were going off and working and bringing AIDS back, and you know, then saying that the wives gave it to them, and so it was a way of making these women independent. And then the clinic, the thing that I'm getting to is that the workers in the clinic were basically like the gospel choir in town. So you'd walk by the clinic, and there'd be all this singing going on inside the health clinic. It was so amazing. I mean, imagine a hospital with that kind of thing going on.
I think people would get better even faster.
Yeah,
I think that's And we do know, that's exactly what we do know, that there is a great physiological resonance. And as the music therapists that we've had on have explained, working with people who can't speak or have dementia or have lost a connection, when you start singing, they start singing with you. Yes. Or people who can't speak for a variety of reasons, aphasia of some sort. If you start singing, they can sing with you, and especially songs of their era or things they love.
Do you know about the Giving Voice choirs? my friend Marge Ostrusko, who's Peter Ostrusko's widow, started the first one, and I think there are several now in Minnesota, and I don't know if they're going out more regionally, but it's basically a choir for people with Alzheimer's, but it's a one-on-one with either their caregiver or their partner, and they sing. They do these songs, and mostly songs that they've chosen. I got to see one of the first performances that they did, and they've got a kick-ass band that backs them up and a great director who, I mean, really gives them little arrangements, and because the memory just comes shining through with the singing, and they're able to sort of tell their stories. The title came from the guy who got up and introduced, said the title of the choir came from the fact he said, you know, people are always talking about us, but nobody ever talks to us or listens to what we have to say, and this is our chance to do that. And it's been a really powerful, I sat at this concert and just wept the whole time. It was so wonderful.
Yeah. Tell us the name of it again.
Giving Voice. If you look up Giving Voice Choirs, you'll find out more about that.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's really right in tune, as it were, to what we are speaking of.
I remember sitting with my friend's dad, who was like way, way far gone, dementia. I mean, he was incontinent. He was seeing people in the other room. He was like really far gone. But he loved, we sang old jazz songs. And I mean, take the song Stardust, you know, it's got that complicated bridge, you know, da 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 da. He remembered all the notes and all the words to that song. We sang all of Stardust, and he didn't miss a note or a word.
Your lips are like a red and ruby palace.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
but I came back from South Africa, and I wrote this song, Promising Sky, that was directly inspired by that trip, because it's kind of like a call and answer. I mean, I would never just sing it alone without an audience. And because it's like it goes, like, every step we take is on sacred ground here under a promising sky. That's the response. Someone or something lived and died all around here
under a promising sky.
And then in the chorus, I'm singing, the promising sky. And the answer is, we're walking under promising sky. Lightning and thunder, promising sky. Here comes the sunshine, promising sky. It's yours and it's mine. And it's just so much fun to get people going on that. And they'll sing one part or the other. And the last verse is, you are an angel when you open your heart
under a promising sky.
You don't need wings to make a brand new start
under a promising sky.
Woo-hoo. And then the last chorus twice, and you know, it just is like a real rouser. It's so much fun to
okay
do.
Everybody, how are you feeling? You're singing along. Maybe you can sing if you're driving. Just keep your eyes open.
That's right. That's the nice thing about the voice. It's the portable, affordable instrument.
If you have just tuned in, this is WERU Community Radio. This is the Healthy Options Program. I'm Rhonda Feynman, and we are talking about using music for personal and community empowerment with our guest, musician and songwriter Claudia Schmidt. Yes, so I'm really energized. How are people feeling out there? More energized? We're connected. The sense of singing in community. I was looking at the Consumer Reports health letter, and there's a little blurb about the health benefits of singing in a choir, singing in a community, whether you can sing or not. It doesn't matter. All right. And that's something too, because people do get a little shy or get the sense that, or alone, you know, sing alone, that I can't sing. I can't carry a tune. There's still
so much of that goes back to those awful teachers early in people's lives who said, oh, you really can't sing, you know, just move your lips or say watermelon, watermelon. And I, you know, so many times I would mention that at a concert about how many, How many of you had music teachers who told you you couldn't sing, and people go, and then I just say, tell them all to go to hell, you know, and it's like, people are like, yeah. I mean, they've carried this stuff their whole lives, you know, of being told at a tender age that they couldn't sing, for gosh sakes. I mean, that's just insane.
Yes.
And cruel. It's cruel. And so people, it's a wound period people carry their whole lives. But I think, you know, there's been such a huge resurgence, not really a resurgence, a surgence of community choirs and community singing.
Yes.
And that's going on nationwide, and you know, 200 people showing up to just to sing songs. And I think it's like a reclamation. I think, you know, popular music, the music business took that all away from us. You know, growing up, my family sang. I mean, we sang in the car. You sang in the classroom. You just sang a few songs, whether it was Sweet Betsy from Pike or whatever the heck it was. But you kind of sang for fun. And everything has become with the business of music, you know, spectacle and yes. American Idol, you know, that whole thing where everything's a freaking contest. And that has really done a lot of damage, I think, especially to younger people who think that's their only concept of singing and making music, you know. So the community choir thing is really is so powerful. And I'm so happy that it's going on.
You know, one of the ways to continue singing is if you'd like to, and you want to sing alone again, and you're concerned, you can just sing about what's happening right around your house. You could just sing, I'm now going to make lunch. Lunch is being made. I am now making lunch. Really, this is ways of doing,
you know,
it.
Life is just a musical, and we just don't know our cues. You know?
That's
it's
right.
In a lot better shape. You know,
like,
it's just
really,
ongoing. I'm with you on that. Right?
That's it. Or, you know, to your partner, your children. We are now.
Opera.
That's right. Today we are singing well, let's go to the beach. Oh, it's hot. Okay. Yes.
What's for dinner? Pasta puttanesca. And then we have to have the opera laugh.
Really? There you go. Everybody, we can hear you. Please be singing. I am listening to WERU 89.9 FM. Yes. And streaming everywhere at weru.org. Yes.
So you had mentioned Still on the Bridge.
Yes.
A little while ago. And that was inspired on the eve of the 50th anniversary of the March from Selma when I heard an old interview that Terry Gross had done with John Lewis some years earlier, where he was telling his whole story of being there that day as a 22-year-old and getting his head bashed in by the state troopers. And again, someone whose voice, he had that gentle voice that spoke of such fierce and deep things, and I was crying listening to the interview before I started writing that song, Still on the Bridge, because for me, that his voice at that point in life, because he was still, you know, he led the sit-in in Congress to when they were trying to come up with some gun control, and I mean, just never, he never stopped walking that walk. I mean, he walked his whole life, and that was what spoke to me, that his message is we all have to keep walking, because there's always going to be this resistance going on. There's always going to be this force that wants to, for some reason, keep people down. I just, the song, it was another song that pretty much wrote itself. And I actually did it the next night. I had a gig in Detroit. And I sang it for the first time, and some people were there who, it turns out, knew Viola Liuzzo, who was the white woman who was killed for driving the young black men to keep them safe after they voted, you know. She was down there, and I didn't even know about her until I sang that song the next night after writing it, that here we had this person from Detroit who was one of the fatalities of that time. And then over time, I've added, I do an introduction that's actually a chant that a friend of mine wrote in a story about winter solstice, and because it's again metaphorically it's about moving through a dark time, and the idea that we're always in these cycles of coming through a dark time and through staying connected and singing together and making our way through the dark, reminding each other that we're not alone. We get through to the light again. And the chant was so beautiful. And I put this melody to it that goes, "We are awake, awake in the night. We turn the wheel to bring the light. We turn the wheel to bring the light." And it's just such, that's all there is to it. And when Sally and I do it, we add harmony, but then we realize you can also do it as a round. You can sing it in a group and just keep going around with that one little melody. And it's very powerful. Do it again. "We are awake, awake in the night. We turn the wheel to bring the light. We turn the wheel to bring the light." And so it's one you can teach people on the spot at a concert, and everybody's, you know, singing along with you. That's kind of become the lead-in to Still on the Bridge now. And it works out really, really great.
So give a little bit of how that would work coming into.
Okay. "We turn the wheel to bring the light. We're still on the bridge, 60 years gone by. Still on the bridge, looking hate in the eye. We can't cross the bridge until we turn them around." Yeah, because I've changed it to 60 now since we just had the 60th anniversary of the March from Selma. So it's kind of like it's that nice chant that kind of brings people in, and then we turn it back out into that chorus, and I don't think I hardly ever do the song now Still on the Bridge without doing that solstice chant before it. Yeah.
Right. Well, we often play that song. I know on this station during the time of the solstice. So,
yes.
So some of our listeners, our regular WERU listeners, will be familiar with these, and it's wonderful to, you say you're not writing protest songs, but you're writing. Again, I want to invite people who are listening to just notice where these melodies and these lyrics come into your own body, come into your own physiology. And yes, it gets through definitely the prefrontal cortex, our minds, but because of the resonance, because of the frequency, because of timbre and rhythm, we are actually feeling this on a physiological, our heartbeat. There have been those scientific studies that we've talked about here on WERU and Healthy Options about how music can regulate the nervous system, promote healing, even on a cellular level, and shift these songs that we're singing that are your original compositions are about, again, serious things. And yet, we're doing it in a way that almost can reduce the cortisol. You know, there are...
Yes. And, you know, I stumbled across recently the actual definition of conspire means to breathe together.
Ooh, let's all take a breath.
Isn't that cool? Isn't that so cool? I know, it was like a goosebump moment when I first read that. Yeah.
We're all having them too. Say that again. Conspire.
Conspire means to breathe together.
So let's conspire. Let's conspire together.
So another thing, Rhonda, that I think of is it's not always about words for me. It's sometimes just about sounds. And when is this an interesting story? I don't think I've ever mentioned the second part of this, but about 2 weeks before my mother's memorial, which was 13 years ago, this little tune came in that I felt like she kind of sent me, you know. And she died in January, and this was May when we were when we buried her. And it's just a simple little melody that came out. And I've done it because right after she died, I'd heard from this friend of mine who said, first you're here, then you're everywhere. And I went, wow, that is so deep. Is that like from Rumi or Tagore or something? And she said, no, my 8-year-old daughter said that.
She's in tune.
First you're here, then you're everywhere. So it was kind of, I'm going to just sing this little tune and the way it kind of came out. Because it came out as specifically, you know, when you're humming a tune, are you going to go do, or are you going to go ooh? And this specifically came out as a D, like D, D, D. So it just goes, D, 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 D,
Okay, everyone, how are you feeling? What's happening physiologically? That is so beautiful. That is so poignant.
So I was doing this one night. I was in the Upper Peninsula, and I was doing a little concert, and there were quite a few Native American people there. One of the guys that was at the concert came up to me afterward and said, we have, in the Ojibwe tradition, we have these, they're like, I don't know exactly, like angels, or almost like whatever the Ojibwe version of like a fairy or an angel would be. They're like beings of light. And he told me that they sing with a dee, 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 dee sound. I mean, I talk about a major goosebump attack, you know. Yeah, yeah. So, and that was just the way it came in. That was the way I was supposed to vocalize that melody. Yeah, it was so,
so beautiful.
Powerful. Yeah.
So beautiful. Yeah. And so resonant. Mm. There are so many levels of memory and love and brokenheartedness and yet connectedness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I almost got like a visual sense of standing on a like a moor or some kind of open space, looking out at a large vista, with not necessarily anything in the main frame, or more of a looking out. Yeah, that was kind of the visual that I got with that, when that melody came in.
Well, I love that you've been explaining the visual aspect of your music.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That you're actually in a place. You're transported, or something is located. A melody is located. A lyric is located.
Yeah.
If you have just tuned
in, going foraging.
Yeah, that's right. Really. Wait, hold on a minute. What did Melvina Reynolds, you know, the great singer?
Yes.
She would. They'd be driving when her husband's name. She'd say, Take the wheel, Bud. I feel a song coming on. Right? Bud. I think his name was Bud. Take the wheel, Bud. I feel a song coming on. There you go.
Oh, that's great.
If you are, have you just tuned in? We have to say this. You are listening to WERU Community Radio. This is the Healthy Options Program, and I'm Rhonda Fineman. We are speaking and talking about using music for personal and community empowerment, and our guest today is musician and songwriter Claudia Schmidt. You know, I've been talking to people about this show, and one person who is an old-time folk musician said whenever she gets really angry and upset, she writes the blues. She writes blues tunes, but she doesn't sing them usually, but she's an old-time musician. But that seems to be the way that expression comes out. So,
well, yeah, and you know, actually, I heard...
And through biting humor as well. Go ahead. Biting humor as well.
Yes. But the blues kind of is its own way out of itself. That's the way I always thought of it. And a bass player that I've worked with in the past had heard an interview with Muddy Waters, I think it was. And somebody asked him, you know, what is the blues? And he said in that fine, like, gentlemanly way, the blues is maintaining your dignity in the face of adversity.
There you go.
Yeah.
And how music affects, yes, and belonging. You're not alone. Maintaining your dignity, yeah. Being part of something bigger. I was talking to an artist friend who said, well, he's just gotten a new studio. He's going into the studio and he's got to have the right music. If he's dancing, he can paint. Okay. So, interesting. And what's the right music? Well, it's whatever's right for his nervous system.
Whatever's right for him at that moment.
That's right. And yeah. And then I've told this story. Another friend would listen to like acid rock, like hardcore rock music during massages. Her nervous system. I know. Think about that. What is resonating? You know, we're talking about these things that are calming the nervous system. Is there in her physiology, maybe some of you listening going, yeah, this is all nice, but can we, you know, can we turn up some noise?
Right.
Right.
Sure thing. Yeah.
Just contemplate what that, you know, that physiology is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So curious. So,
well,
go ahead.
I find the noise numbing. So
I do. I find it so agitating. I'm like,
yeah,
really. And you know what? There's a whole series of the sand work where they play different songs and different music and paintings, and the sand can become different shapes. It's like beautiful mandalas and such, and different music creates different images. So Hopi flute music from a flute tradition creates a particular mandala, and the ones with the hard rock actually created a lot of resonant and a little bit more chaos. But so. Just we'll get the name. We'll have a link to that when we put this all together, so that people can actually see that, because there are videos of that. I was reading about someone else and listening to other musicians, some younger musicians coming out these days who are actually talking about music and healing, and one of them. And I did so many, and I'll get the link to the actual right musician that we want to give credit to, was talking about the tendrils of compassion, that her music and her healing creates the tendrils of compassion. And I thought that was beautiful. And that sense of belonging.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Something happened. This actually happened when I lived on Beaver Island back in the 1990s in the middle of Lake Michigan. There was a young woman whose mother had listened to a lot of Sally's and my music, and she was kind of a fangirl of mine when I was living on Beaver Island. This girl now was probably in junior high. So I know about this because her science teacher was somebody that I knew. And she chose as her experiment doing plant growth through different types of music. So she had a rock group called Mr. Big or something that she had come across, and she had classical music, and me, and a country band, and then like silence, like control group with silence, and the funny thing is, Mr. Big won.
Oh, and the most growth.
The most growth was the rock band, but I tied with silence. But with the country band, there was like no plant growth whatsoever.
Okay, this is
according to she'd taken a photo of the test results and sent them to me.
So oh, that is so funny. This is the totally uncontrolled scientific study of a 14-year-old at the at the science fair.
I talked to a lot of older musicians who really. Or younger musicians who play soulfully. Silence is as much of a part of the experience as the notes. Becoming more aware. In fact, it was it Aldous Huxley I saw? I was at a Unitarian church down on Cape Cod, and in their bathroom they had this beautiful little kind of like calligraphy thing on the wall, and then this quote from Aldous Huxley: After silence, music comes the closest to expressing the inexpressible. Oh, and I just really love that.
That is gorgeous. And by the way, in terms of the plant, and we do have a lot of gardens, please try that experiment at home and then let us know what you determine. But say that again, because we are coming to the end of, yeah. I cannot not even believe it, but it always happens.
And it, no, it went so fast.
Yeah. Silence yeah. is...
After silence... Music comes the closest to expressing the inexpressible. And that's from Aldous Huxley.
And that, I think, will be our final word on this, to be continued. Our guest today, if you've just joined us, you can listen to all of this and you'll find out how. But our guest today on Healthy Options has been musician, singer, songwriter, and poet, Claudia Schmidt. Thank you so much, Claudia, for being with us today. We always appreciate you speaking with us on Healthy Options and encouraging us to keep on singing, or if you haven't started.
Can I just close out with a line, from a chorus from a song of mine from years ago? Yeah. Here comes joy, let her in, yeah.
There you go. Start singing if you haven't already. Thank you, Claudia.
Thank you.
Claudia's website, claudiaschmidt.com. That's Claudia, and I will spell it. S is in Sam, C H, M is in Mary, I, D is in Deborah, T as in Thomas. ClaudiaSchmidt.com. You can find the link to this show when posted in the public affairs section and the Healthy Options archive at weru.org. Get the WERU app. You can listen to all of these Healthy Options as podcasts. Thanks Joel Mann, Amy Brown at WERU for engineering support, to Petra Hall for production assistance. And as always, thanks to all of our WERU listeners and supporters. This is Rhonda Feynman wishing you the best in health.